I stopped watching and turned away from the alley. Something warm was running down my wrist. I blinked and saw I was still biting down on my fist, hard enough to draw blood from the knuckles. I realized something else. I was weeping. From just around the corner, I could hear Osef's quick rhythmic grunts. I had one last chance to make a decision, one final opportunity to decide who I was going to be. I could step into the alley and stand up for Hassan, the way he'd stood up for me all those times in the past, and accept whatever would happen to me. Or I could run. In the end, I ran. I ran because I was a coward. I was afraid of Osef and what he would do to me. I was afraid of getting hurt. That's what I told myself as I turned my back to the alley, to Hassan. That's what I made myself believe. I actually aspired to cowardice, because the alternative, the real reason I was running, was that Osef was right. Nothing was free in this world. Maybe Hassan was the price I had to pay, the lamb I had to slay to win Baba. Was it a fair price? The answer floated to my conscious mind before I could thwart it. He was just a Hazara, wasn't he? I ran back the way I'd come. I ran back to the all but deserted bazaar. I lurched to a cubicle and leaned against the padlocked swing doors. I stood there panting and sweating, wishing things had turned out some other way. About 15 minutes later, I heard voices and running footfalls. I crouched behind the cubicle and watched Osef and the other two sprinting by, laughing as they hurried down the deserted lane. I forced myself to wait 10 more minutes. Then I walked back to the rutted track that ran along the snow-filled ravine. I squinted in the dimming light and spotted Hassan walking slowly toward me. I met him by a leafless birch tree on the edge of the ravine. He had the blue kite in his hands. That was the first thing I saw. And I can't lie now and say my eyes didn't scan it for any rips. His chapan had mud smudges down the front, and his shirt was ripped just below the collar. He stopped, swayed on his feet like he was going to collapse. Then he steadied himself, handed me the kite. "Where were you? I looked for you," I said. Speaking those words was like chewing on a rock. Hassan dragged a sleeve across his face and wiped snot and tears. I waited for him to say something, but we just stood there in silence, in the fading light. I was grateful for the early evening shadows that fell on Hassan's face and concealed mine. I was glad I didn't have to return his gaze. Did he know I knew? And if he knew, then what would I see if I did look into his eyes? Blame? Indignation? Or, God forbid, what I feared most? Guileless devotion. That, most of all, I couldn't bear to see. He began to say something, and his voice cracked. He closed his mouth, opened it, and closed it again. He took a step back, wiped his face. And that was as close as Hassan and I ever came to discussing what had happened in the alley. I thought he might burst into tears, but to my relief, he didn't. And I pretended I hadn't heard the crack in his voice. Just like I pretended I hadn't seen the dark stain in the seat of his pants, or those tiny drops that fell from between his legs and stained the snow black. "Arasai will worry," was all he said. He turned from me and limped away. It happened just the way I'd imagined. I opened the door to the smoky study and stepped in. Baba and Rahim Khan were drinking tea and listening to the news crackling on the radio. Their heads turned. Then a smile played on my father's lips. He opened his arms. I put the kite down and walked into his thick, hairy arms. I buried my face in the warmth of his chest and wept. Baba held me close to him, rocking me back and forth. In his arms, I forgot what I'd done, and that was good.
This ends Disc 2.